Welcome to a La Trobe University podcast. I would be your host, Matt Smith, and today I'm talking with Nick Bisley, Professor of Politics at La Trobe University. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be here.
You're here today to talk to me about the 9/11 attacks on the United States and the war on terror. It's been 10 years since the event happened, and the attacks on the World Trade Center were an iconic event. Do you remember what you were doing at the time, and what were your impressions of it?
I remember it very clearly. I had landed in Melbourne. I was living in England at the time. I just finished my PhD and was coming back for a couple of weeks' holiday before I was going to start my first academic job back in the UK. I landed on September 11th at around 8 p.m, then went out to dinner with some friends and was spending the night with a friend, a couple, both of whom are pilots for Qantas. And as we were driving back from dinner, they both started getting text messages on their phones from other pilot friends saying, you know, you'll never believe this thing's going on. And I'm kind of in that sort of semi-jet-lagged state that you are after a long-haul flight and just kind of going, it's all over. And then asking Mark, my friend, the Qantas pilot, said, you know, this guy's not like that. He wouldn't be pulling stunts and this sort of thing. And anyway, we go home and turn on the TV and lo and behold, that's all happening. And then proceed to watch it, of course, with these two people who the next morning have to get in an aeroplane and fly it. It was fairly surreal for a whole bunch of reasons, on top of all of the other layers of weirdness that the whole thing brought with it. This kind of personal connection that I had was kind of a bit strange. And I'd lived in New York as a kid. My brother was living in New York at the time. I had close friends in Lower Manhattan, lived within about 300 or 400 meters of the World Trade Center, so I knew people who worked there and that sort of stuff. But you felt you had a very personal kind of touch with what was going on.
It would have really brought it home to you at the time.
I think since a lot of people had, this just can't possibly be true. Mm. You know, this just incomprehension watching it all happening. And then as the buildings fell down and then trying to call people who you knew and you couldn't get through to it. And it did have an immediacy, but yeah, watching it all through the eyes of a highly jet-lagged person who's... And I remember waking up the next morning thinking, you know, that sense you have, it was very strange and it probably wasn't true.
Mm.
And then that as reality sinks in as you wake up and you kind of just go, geez, actually it wasn't a bad dream. It was this bizarre set of events and trying to make sense of what it would all mean.
I remember when I first found out about it, I got home from the movies after seeing Jurassic Park 3. And my dad was, don't knock it, good movie, not as good as the first one, better than the second.
Or the second for that matter. Yeah.
I think that there was a big sense of disbelief around the world that something like this could happen. Did America think that it was untouchable?
I don't think it felt that it was untouchable. I mean, continental mainland of the United States hadn't been attacked by a foreign power since 1812. So that it didn't believe it was completely invulnerable, but it sort of felt that this was kind of off the menu, if you like. And I think the major reason that, from an American point of view, this was something that they just hadn't comprehended was for all of the defense planning and expenditure and all this sort of stuff, which was all designed to see off a particular kind of threat, no one had contemplated, or at least seriously contemplated, this kind of activity. Plenty of other states and societies around the world have been victims to terrorism. I was living in Britain and there were no litter bins in public trains and train stations because of the IRA bombing campaign, which was still going on when I first moved to Britain in 96. Spain, you know, Japan, plenty of developed countries had had it. America never had it at all. That sense of a kind of complacency about that, not that America would ever be attacked. I mean, the whole Cold War posture of American defense was that America was going to be attacked by the Soviets. And to this day, you know, they expect to be attacked militarily. But of course, since September 11th, now they're just completely obsessed with the terrorist threat. I mean, over-obsessed with it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's really heightened things there now, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. You've sort of swung from one extreme to the other where you had that sense that terrorism was someone else's problem to this is our number one threat, which it palpably isn't. That sense of striking the right balance between preparedness and the kind of totally paranoid, over-the-top reaction that is now the norm in the US. They've never been able to strike that right balance, I think. And America is worse off for it. I mean, I think when you visit America, just at an individual level, the sorts of just minor intrusions into your privacy that you get now that you never used to get, and the minor indignities of being frisked, getting onto a plane, when everyone knows any well-intentioned terrorist is not going to be caught out with this stuff. And there's a real sense that there's this, what some people have called the choreography of security. You have to be seen to be doing the security dance to put out a sense that there is a greater degree of vigilance. And yet everyone agrees that their ability actually to see off a well-intentioned terrorist or some other ne'er-do-well has really not much improved by all this stuff. I mean, you have these stories of airline pilots having toenail scissors taken off them. To this day, I think you get on Qantas flights, at least in economy class, you have plastic knives. Although in business class, they give you metal knives, which is what I was like. September 11th, hijackers are, of course, all traveling in first class at the front of the plane. So it all seems a little peculiar. In my mind, the real contrast that you have visiting the US now, when, you know, I used to go fairly regularly prior to September 11th, as a visitor, you really see that degree of, I think it's paranoia.
Yeah.
About this threat. You can sort of understand where it comes from, but it's surprising that it's still there 10 years on.
Yeah, yeah. George Bush stood at the ruins of the World Trade Center. He stood with a bullhorn.
Yeah, I remember the image. I can't remember what he said, but it's that quite striking image.
How much did 9/11 define his presidency from then on? And did it save it?
There's a couple of things, a couple of obvious things. One is there's no question that September 11th absolutely defined Bush.
Mm.
It made his presidency in a lot of ways. He was a guy who was 9 months into what was regarded by many as an illegitimate presidency. He got in on the back of a Supreme Court decision, which has effectively said stop counting the votes in Florida and give the presidency to Bush. And it was an awful decision for a bunch of reasons, least of which was that the judges all voted along clearly partisan lines. And constitutional lawyers in America, regardless of their own narrow partisan views, are really shake their heads when you talk about that decision. But so he was a fairly illegitimate president, or at least one who was struggling with legitimacy. He had a fairly unremarkable set of policies. America had entered a minor recession. You know, there's a sense that this was a presidency that was kind of flailing a bit. He was not especially charismatic. And then this happened. Initially, the reaction, I think, for the president was ordinary in that, you might recall, he jumped on an aeroplane and then no one saw him for about 3 days because there was this sense that they had to keep him secure. There was this notion that America was under attack and the standard operating procedure for an attack on the United States was that the president was to get in a plane and fly away from the combat zone. It was all predicated around a nuclear attack. So as if Washington suffered a nuclear strike, the president gets in a plane and flies to the Rocky Mountains or somewhere in the Midwest and the machinery of government can continue to function. So they sort of followed that, but for a little bit too long. It was like, come on, this is not a nuclear attack. You need to get out there and be seen. And then, so there was a few days of what's going on. And then the show got on the road, and then they got out and about and went down to Lower Manhattan and I was talking to the rescue workers and various others. I don't think everyone believed it. The opinion polls and the things were just astonishing within America and globally in the sense of the degree of sympathy with presidents, with the United States and with their course of action that something has to be done. You know, there's a famous headline on Le Monde, you know, the left-wing Parisian newspaper, not known as a bastion of pro-American sentiment. Front cover said, "Today we are all Americans," on, you know, September 11th.
Mm.
So you had this wellspring of popular opinion in support of America going after these guys. And that then, of course, led to Afghanistan. But Bush absolutely, from a domestic electoral point of view, put the war footing as his central policy platform. If you look at his re-election campaign in 2004, it was overwhelmingly about America and security and the war on terror. And if you put these guys, i.e. the Democrats, in charge, it'll all go to hell. And there was that truly awful image where the Democrats realized they were on this campaign, which had to be fought on Bush's terms. And you had that awful image of John Kerry, who was a genuine Vietnam War veteran, appearing at the Democrat convention doing this cringe-making kind of salute saying, "I'm John Kerry reporting for duty," and attempting to kind of militarize the campaign, and it just went down terribly. But also the Bush legacy as a president was one of, you know, he'll be remembered historically for launching the two big wars, both of which were much longer, much more expensive, and much less decisive than they ever imagined they would be in Iraq and Afghanistan. And also oversaw a huge increase in the American budget deficit problem, so that whilst we tend to think of the deficit as a Obama problem, the big deficit started with the military expenditure in 2003-2004 and was then exacerbated by a series of budget cuts, something for which I think history will probably be kind to Bush about, and that was he was the president who was in charge when the GFC hit, and it was on his watch that the first big bailout plans and the stimulus package happened, you know, the negotiations between White House and Wall Street. You know, his legacy is very much one in which September 11th is the event with whom his presidency will be most closely associated and will be that which made him a compelling political story, but also which was the particular ways in which they reacted to September 11th will be things for which I think he will probably be judged fairly harshly in the longer run.
Do you think that without the catalyst of 9/11 that the war on terror wouldn't have happened?
No, absolutely not. There's clear evidence that there were certainly people within the foreign defense policy establishment who were saying, you know, counterterrorism is something we've got to take seriously. Mm. Al-Qaeda is a serious threat to us and our interests, not so much on the homeland as the main focus, but that was there, but more about sort of action activities in and around the Persian Gulf. Prior to September 11th, this was all kind of pushed to one side and say, no, that's not where the priorities are. And there's a bunch of books that have been written about people saying, we've got to take this guy, Osama bin Laden, seriously and all of these things, and just being told, you know, this is not a particular priority.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if there'd been no September 11th, it's impossible to say what might have transpired, whether there'd have been different decisions. But certainly the kind of wholesale shift in attitudes towards terrorism in general within the United States, the development of, say, the Department of Homeland Security and all this sort of stuff, to say nothing of the launching of the two big wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, they just simply wouldn't have occurred without this sort of event.
Probably because of economic interests.
And also, how do you sell a war?
Mm.
If you look at the way in which both Iraq and Afghanistan were sold politically within the United States, it's about counterterrorism, it's about security, it's about threats. Now, we all know that the link between Iraq and September 11th was pretty tenuous, if there was even a link at all. But those attacks, the absolutely televisually shocking event that it was, meant that all of a sudden the rule book was kind of being radically rewritten about how you could use force. Remember, America had up until September 11th been increasingly reluctant to use military force to put its soldiers in harm's way, particularly for humanitarian interventions and this kind of thing. The famous NATO bombing campaign in Kosovo, Clinton made it very clear that there was no way American ground forces were going to be involved in a war. You know, a lot of people felt like, if that's true, you don't say that publicly. You don't signal one of your major strategic decisions to your enemy. But I think that if you're looking at those two conflicts, they simply wouldn't have occurred. There's no question they wouldn't have occurred. And I still think that if there'd been a different result in the 2000 election, if Gore had been accorded electoral victory by the Supreme Court, I think almost certain that there wouldn't have been a war in Iraq.
Mm.
I think there almost certainly would have been an Afghan campaign. It could well have been a much bigger campaign for that matter. But the link that the Bush administration wanted to draw between Saddam Hussein, his regime, and September 11th was made possible by those attacks and the kind of levels of insecurity that they promoted, particularly in government. I mean, I think more than anywhere, you saw governments, politicians, political figures be more strikingly affected by this than almost anyone else. The conviction with which these guys talk about the kind of threat that Al-Qaeda presented, you know, these guys believe this stuff. They were genuinely shocked by what had occurred and genuinely believe that these guys presented a new kind of essentially non-deterrable, violent, utterly inhumane threat that needed to be dealt with in a very severe fashion. I think if the September 11 attacks had been preempted, and there's a lot of reports and information out that shows there were lots of opportunities. If people had been looking in the right place and the intelligence failures hadn't occurred, then this, the attack would easily have been prevented. I think American foreign policy over the past 10 years would have been completely different. Yeah, completely.
Now that we're 10 years on, we're already looking at the 9/11 attacks in a different light.
Mm.
How do you think they're now perceived?
I think the attacks are still seen as quite shocking. I mean, I still think when you watch that footage, there's that sense of disbelief about it all. The perspective that we bring to bear on it, I mean, I think it goes without saying that when we look at September 11th, we almost instinctively begin to think about Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think certainly from my point of view as someone who sort of studies international politics, the view is that I think September 11th was shocking. What was more striking, and I think as time goes on, this opinion will become more firm, was that how badly wrong the Americans and others got the policy response to it. That's to say, I think the Iraq war was clearly a big blunder, a severe blunder. Everything that people who knew that country and knew terrorism said, why you shouldn't go into Iraq, basically came true. The country will fall apart, the sectarian warfare, places being kept together by an authoritarian dictator, that you will divert resources away from the war on terror, and that will embolden Al-Qaeda, you'll act as a recruiting. I think the kind of overreaction that it prompted, but cool heads needed to prevail in the response, and they didn't. Quite the opposite. It was almost as if there was a sense that a kind of revenge catharsis was going to be necessary to deal with this. And I think in many ways an irresponsible policy, just strategically not a smart move, not only about Afghanistan, but then to make the big mistake of intervening in Iraq in the way that they did.
That's all the time we've got for the La Trobe University podcast today. If you have any questions, comments or feedback about this podcast or any other, then send us an email at podcast@latrobe.edu.au. Professor Nick Bisley, thanks for your time.
Thank you.